for citizens. I'm looking at the order 25 to 10, according to my watch. And so, as you all know, we have until after 12, so that we don't disturb other members who are to attend other committees. Let me start by welcoming all of you. I think we met with SIFA at Centurion in their offices. Not all members were there, but the majority of members were there, I guess. Yes, the majority. We are following our program, even though we had to postpone our meeting last week due to the parliament program changes. And I must say that it has destabilized us a lot. We'd like to apologize to the SIFA, chairperson and CEO and all the delegation for that. We know that some of the things really are not beyond our control. But we'll try going forward by all means to be to hold our meetings as scheduled, and if we suspect something, we'll inform you timely so that you don't have to spend time and your money coming this side. Mom, are you here? You lost. Okay. Today we're considering the SIFA strategy on what we've been waiting for quite some time now. They have various lending, they have a lending module, and within it there's something that we see it as our enemy, number one, the chairperson, that is the intermediaries, because we feel that it robs our people of their rightful, you know, benefit. So we will be hearing from you on that, on the strategy and the approach on that particular matter. I want the secretary quickly to give to deal with the item number 2. No, the sub number 1. Apologies.
Chairperson, I'd like to put it on record that there were no apologies issued.
Okay, we take it that those who are not here are absent. They haven't apologized. Thank you. May we then give the FIFA leadership an opportunity to brief us without any further waste of time. Members will ask questions after the full presentation. But as usual, don't forget that the questions also, comments are also welcome so that we help strengthen our institutions. Our role is not only to question and criticize, our role is also to build, to help in building our own institutions that are for the benefit of the same constituencies that we represent here. Thank you. What did you want to do? Doesn't go down. Okay. But you have the hard copies with you. If you can't see it properly, please refer to your hard copy so that we save time. Over to Mandisa.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you very much for making the time for us to come and address this very challenging topic, I must say. We have tried to structure presentation directly to answered questions, so that we benefit from the direct communication and discussion. Then I must say upfront that we have designed the presentation, and in our strategy that we had in October 23 and 23rd of 2014, we spent a considerable time looking at the issue of intermediaries, and it has been a burning issue. We have also, and in that discussion, we also incorporated a whole lot of the comments and suggestions that we got from this committee when we interacted with ourselves in the past. We are confident that this is the beginning of finding ways to address the issue. It probably is not an issue that we can change overnight, but certainly you will see in the presentation that we've taken some bold steps to make sure that the final beneficiary, the intended beneficiary, that is your survivalist and micro-enterprises, are actually benefiting from the program and the incentives that government has designed for them. And so, Chair, without further ado, I will request my CEO, Ms. Makuba, to start briefing the committee on the CIFA funding, and I will come back to present on the role of intermediaries going forward. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members. I will just begin by just giving a little bit on the economy landscape, where us as CIFA believe we have got a significant role to play. There are a number of surveys that have been conducted by various institutions. Some of them are private and some of them are public entities. There are approximately 5.6 million SMEs in this country. Small, micro and medium-sized enterprises, which most of them will require adjusted of funding. If you have to look at the funding gap by the statistics run by ZSA as well as FinCo, which was analyzed by the National Credit Regulator. You will see the slide that you have my chair. I just added just one column, the column that you already have a number of SMEs in scope, but the first column, that's what we just added, just to illustrate comparing the private survey done as well as our own ZSA surveys, just for illustration purposes. Both surveys really indeed show that there is a need for the SMEs out there to be assisted in terms of funding. They look at this in terms of those SMEs that are registered, the former SMEs, in terms of ZSA 450,000 and then 1 million by FinCo, and there's a gap there of 382,000 by ZSA that require funding versus 940,000 by FinCo. So all in all, there are over 1.2 million SMEs that require assistance from the state SA survey, and 2.9 million by Facebook. This means to us that really SIFA was an agency of government that has been formed to provide access to finance to SMEs and cooperatives. There's a significant role for us to play to make sure that these SMEs are provided with funding opportunities and support, so that we can be able to help to assist in addressing the challenges that we face as a country, unemployment, poverty, and inequality. There are also SMEs that are not registered, but registration largely look at those that, for example, they register with the CRTC. Some of them they have VAT registered from a two perspective. But all in all, indicated there are almost 6 million SMEs that require assistance from institutions such as FIFA. So our mandate was really is to address this funding gap that we have seen, where we provide funding in terms of loans, We also have an insurance company, Kula Credit Guarantee, where we assist SMEs to access funding from commercial banks, financial institutions and non-financial institutions, for them to, should there be any challenge with regard to the guarantee, we'll be able to indemnify the financial institution through our credit guarantee facility. We need to create, continue to create and build partnerships with various institutions that share our developmental mandate or agenda to ensure that we support and provide finance to SMEs. We continue to come up, as you see, down the line in terms of our strategy to develop a number of innovative products and services to ensure that we reach the SMEs out there. In terms of our target markets, as an institution, our role is to ensure that those gaps that have been identified with regard to funding businesses that are owned by women. For instance, 45% of our investment area has to go to businesses that are owned and managed by women. 70% of our disbursements go to businesses that are owned by blacks. We've set aside 80%, 80% of our funding disbursements to businesses that are owned and managed by young people. You should be aware that the past year or so, we have set aside $1.7 billion to fund businesses that are managed and owned by young people based on the challenges that we know young people, majority of them are unemployed. You look at the unemployment in the country. Being a developer institution, we need to be able to target the areas that are really underdeveloped. For example, people are living in rural communities, people are living in the townships. They need to be assisted. So we set aside 45% to people in rural communities in terms of funding. People living with disability, we have put aside 2% as a funding mechanism in terms of activities to ensure that we target this group of our citizens to make sure that their business, their idea in terms of business activities also be realized in terms of them having access to funding from our institution. We provide the funding across a number of sectors. We align our funding activities with the New Growth Path, with HIPEF and the National Development Bank. Most importantly, our mandate we are given that we need to be able to assist across a number of services, across a number of sectors. For example, we provide funding to entrepreneurs who are participating in ITC or in tourism, and those that want, for example, to open franchise type of businesses. We assist those in the retail space. We provide funding to SMEs that are in manufacturing in a small scale, as long as you're looking for funding to indicate in terms of the quantum that I've mentioned shortly. So in manufacturing, agro-processing, in a small scale, we assist those that are in agriculture. Instead, we have a fund that we manage on behalf of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, where the beneficiaries of the land reform, we have got land, we need that land to be taken into fruition in terms of production. We assist in terms of machination, providing funding to buy land equipment, as well as to buy producers can be able to use the land into farming activities. We provide funding for SMEs that are in the construction space. Largely in our portfolio, we find those that we have contracts by either from private or public sector municipalities, where they need to be able to mend roads, potholes, roof, construction of schools, clinics, and other activities. So we provide funding for them either to acquire the equipment or to do the, to buy the material they can be able to do for the construction purposes. We are also participating in the mining, in mine space. Small scale mining aligned with the quantum that they can be able to provide. We also participate in the industry. We encourage particularly young people who get involved in the renewable energy, solar geyser, heat pumps, you name them, waste management. That's some of the areas that we participate from a target market perspective. In terms of our delivery model, we have what we call the direct lending channel and the wholesale lending channel. Direct lending channel is where we utilize our branch network. We have got regional offices in all provinces of our land, where clients can be able to walk in into our offices and apply for funding. We also utilize intermediaries at Ronald Jefferson, where we utilize these partners to help us to ensure that SMEs get funding. But the chair will go into detail in that regard. In terms of the distribution, I indicated we've got wholesale lending. We have got the direct lending using our vast network. A client can walk into CIFA offices applying for funding from a direct lending from at least 50,000. So between 50,000 and 5 million facilities in all products that I've mentioned, for all categories of target markets that I've mentioned, they can be able to walk into our offices. What we have also done is that we have collaborated with our sister agency, HIDA, where clients are able to go into HIDA offices, that is with more branches than ourselves, to be able to be assisted in terms of completing the funding application. Those funding applications will then be forwarded to our offices for processing. I've mentioned about the credit guarantee scheme, which where we have the insurance company that provides funds for our bank institution up to 5 million. Our wholesale lending can provide the funding to survivalist micro, small and medium enterprises up to from 500 to 5 million. We have got, in terms of our footprint, we have got offices that are indicated across the nation. We also utilize the services of the cooperative financial institutions, the microfinance institution, our partners in terms of the retail financial institution, and the nation CEDA will collocate it in over 25 of their branches. And we also have the fund, where we have created this fund in partnership with the other institutions. For example, we have got a fund that we've put together with the Anglo-American Zenith, where people want to do mine exploration, want to venture into mining space, can be able to go into that facility, which is managed through Anglo-American to get funding for their mining activities. We also have a fund together with Transnet and Anglo-American, called CODISA Development Fund, where the SMEs who have the supply arranged to either provide fuel, locomotive items, any other logistics activities with Transnet that they can be able to be getting funds from that association. Honourable Chair, let me pause at this stage for my chair to take us through the next part of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe before I go into the next slide, just to explain the difference between the STEPS-SA and the FinScope numbers, because it looks quite significant. The only difference is because of the methodology that was used by FinScope in relation to the STEPS-SA methodology. STEPS-SA, when they look at enterprises, they look at the legal contracting age in terms of South Africa and South African law. FinScope just takes anybody. So you find that FinScope is actually counting in the 14-year-olds who are selling something, whereas STEPS-SA would take the legal age in terms of the economic activity. Also, in terms of the acronym that we use, we tend to move from SSMME to SME. Our mandate covers from survivalist, small, micro, and medium, and cooperative. Thank you. And cooperatives, of course. We actually partner with cooperatives in a bit different way than just enterprises, but I'll explain that as we go through. Because we partner with cooperatives in two ways. They are either cooperatives that are enterprises registered as cooperatives, and we also partner with cooperatives as individuals, but I'll explain that as we go through. Going back to the slides, we thought that we should just, in our briefing, reflect on the past and look at the timeline since 1995, when the initiative of focusing on small business was started with the Small Business White Paper, 1995. That was launched at a conference that was there, and the guest speaker was the late Honorable President Mandela. Critically, in terms of the steps that went through this, that there was consistency up until 2012 in terms of using the intermediaries as the delivery mechanism to reach small businesses. If we go to the next slide, we sort of explain what the events were in each of the years. In 1995, the white paper on small business development was adopted by government, and there was a decision to actually tap on existing infrastructure, that is in terms of organizations. We remember that pre-94 we had a very vibrant NGO sector in South Africa. Churches and, you know, SACC and their churches were quite active in entrepreneurial development in terms of supporting the marginalized communities. And at that time, there was then a decision that rather have the government entity, which was later called KULA, focusing on enabling this infrastructure that is closer to the people. The second reason for that was that there was a recognition that the banking system in South Africa has got a very wide footprint into the different provinces, into local communities. And that they've got deep pockets if you look at their capitalization, and they have the financial expertise. So use the banking infrastructure to actually reach more small businesses. And that was the product that was delivered through that infrastructure was only the guarantee scheme. And of course, I've already talked about the NGO sector that was quite vibrant at that stage. And so the state resources went to enable both private sector and non-governmental organizations to actually reach the small businesses. And so KULA Enterprise Finance Agency was then established in 1996 to actually lend to these intermediaries. And my chief has already spoken about the different types of intermediaries, but just to recap, the different types of intermediaries therefore became the banks in terms of just the guarantee. Then it was retail finance intermediaries, which were the intermediaries, the people who ran businesses or NGOs to on land to small businesses. And then we separated the organizations that funded the small businesses from those who funded the survivalist and small. And the survivalist and small were called microfinance institutions. And then there were partnerships such as the Anglo-Kula Fund. There were partnerships that were either focused on a particular sector because you wanted to draw on the expertise of those who understand the different sectors better. There were also joint ventures that may have been geographically, because South Africa is a big country and it may have been difficult to reach certain areas geographically, and then you would have formed those. And in 2004, government took a decision to separate the financing of survivalist and micro from that of financing small and medium. And so SANEF was established in 2005. And KULA was then left with financing of small and medium. And the strategy at that time was that KULA would focus on working with intermediaries that had potential to be sustainable and profitable. But I think the word was really, the emphasis was more on sustainable. But you had to make a little bit of cost recovery and a little bit of profit to be able to be sustainable. Or shall I actually explain that differently? KULA then took a decision that if you are going to be sustainable and be around for a long time, you have to be motivated by making some income. Secondly, KULA said you have to be doing this for profit, because if you are not doing it for profit, you probably are not going to be around for a long time and therefore are not going to be sustainable. So who are focused on interacting with intermediaries that were for profit, but there were also banks that Kula was in partnership with. Then when SAMEF was established, SAMEF therefore was charged with expanding the micro enterprise financing by establishing and facilitating the establishment of new microfinance institutions. And this decision was based on international practice that you actually have more efficient microfinance institutions that don't charge micro enterprises too high interest rates when you've got competing microfinance institutions. So there's many of them instead of relying only a few, because then the few will charge high interest rates. And of course they would do this because they would be dealing with new microfinance institutions. They would provide institutional grants and building the capacity until these institutions are strong. And some have also looked at financial services cooperatives as a strategy to actually get closer to the people. And so when SAMEF was established, the whole infrastructure of microfinance institutions was moved to be managed by SAMEF. However, on the ground, small businesses were complaining about how they are treated by the intermediaries in terms of the interest rates in particular that they were being charged. And not being able to access the loans as government had decided. And so, and I think the parliamentary committee actually was quite active in motivating for direct lending to small businesses. And so in 2008, cabinet took a decision and applied resources to actually pilot direct lending by Kula. At the time it was called Kula Direct. And I think it was 2011 that the pilot started to be implemented in Pretoria, Johannesburg and East London. We also saw some new developments in 2010 where the new growth path actually identified certain sectors that we should all try to focus on in terms of growing the economy, and those are listed there. And in 2012, when Small Enterprise Finance Agency was established, and it was established through a merger of both Kula and SAMEF. So we'll remember that it was one organization before, and through CIFA it was brought together again to form one organization. But at this point, CIFA was also supposed to roll out and accelerate the direct lending to small businesses. And CIFA was established as a subsidiary of the IDC, and its mandate was located and is located within the IDC Act, Section 3G, which is about fostering the development of small and medium enterprises and cooperatives. As we started CIFA, we wanted to reflect. We were faced with making sure that the measure works. We had to reflect on the lessons by SAMEF and Kula, and we also had to deliver at the same time to small businesses, because you couldn't say, no, we are still looking at this. So in doing that, we reflected and we drew some key lessons from Kula and SAMEF. And I must say, I would like to thank this committee, because the committee really kept us on our toes, asking difficult questions, which I think today we will be answering today. We realized that in terms of the survivalists and micro-enterprises, considering that government gives a big grant to support those enterprises, using the microfinance intermediaries actually was not ideal. It was not working because they were charging excessive interest rates when they charge the micro enterprises, and I'll share some of the numbers in terms of the interest rates. We also realize that the government subsidy to support these micro enterprises was actually ending up subsidizing the microfinance institutions, the intermediaries, and the benefits not reaching the micro enterprises. the industry of microfinance would argue that actually they are benefiting because our existence means that they are having access to the loans. But one can argue that, but by the time they ask those loans, they are so expensive that they may not be actually producing the desired effect. In terms of the small and medium enterprises, again, look of intermediaries. Remember, both Kula and Samef were using intermediaries. We realized that there was a high failure rate of small businesses that required dedicated post-loan support, business support, both in terms of the technical skills and the business skills. Because businesses operate in a particular area. If you're a business that's operating in agriculture, you need agricultural business skills or post-loan skills. And many of the intermediaries actually were not able to do that because they were generalists in terms of their own skills. Therefore, they were not providing the technical skills to the business. Also, we realized that the turnaround time that small businesses had to experience from the time they applied to the time they got loans was rather long, and we were looking at how can these inefficiencies be addressed. And of course, the policy decision of 2010 through the NGP and IPEC meant that's the policy decision of identifying specific sectors, meant that we have to look at specific skills that are relevant to those sectors to be able to support small businesses. Also, we realize that not all intermediaries are effective in delivering government development objectives of providing access to finance. In other words, remember the decision that was taken by Kula to actually focus on those that are sustainable and profitable. We found that there was a lot of tension between small businesses accessing this funding through these intermediaries and the desire to actually be sustainable and make profit. And that some of these intermediaries, even though the noble objective was to form partnerships with existing organizations, that in fact over time, these intermediaries were 100% reliant on government funding, which now doesn't make it a partnership, but literally makes it a branch of FIFA basically. And of course, that the cost of starting these intermediaries, of delivering to small businesses by those who are starting was much higher than those who already exist and offer the service. But then if you look at what I just said, that if they then rely on government 100%, then you are defeating the purpose of leveraging the existing experience. And of course, as I've already said, extending the loans to specific sectors requires specific knowledge of that particular sector, and therefore would enable effective credit assessment, business support, and post-loan support. We also learned that intermediaries that are located closer to the small businesses can be more efficient in providing the business support that's required by the businesses. And in talking about this, I must also just share that the desire for a sustainable and profitable intermediary actually is in conflict with being close to the small business. Why am I saying that? As intermediaries were trying to be profitable and sustainable, they would actually want to locate many of their activities in a central place. And so they end up with head office and with very minimum support available for the small businesses in the local environment. And so in a way, there's tension in all these, but our lessons. As we're learning all these, we're also looking at the measure, as I suggested. The 5 years of the measure focused on consolidating the two organizations, the measure of the two organizations. We were faced with human resources issues the committee would remember very well that this was a big challenge of actually, you know, bringing the two institutions together. And we were having to make sure that we comply with the legislation, especially that with the pillar of the merger itself. Basic staff came from both organizations into a new organization, but most challenging to try and create and develop, establish and create and develop and maintain a common culture, that is a SIFA culture. I must say, Chair, that we are still, it's a long process we are still battling with, but certainly from the last few years, we are far ahead. But it's a journey, if I may say. We had to merge the policies and the systems and develop an integrated system, both in terms of management and administrative systems such as HR and financial management. Most importantly, we had to integrate the loan management system. Remember, Kula had its own loan management system, SAMF had its own management system. We had to integrate this so that we have one management system. In the next slide, I share the achievements from the last years. And here, we try to actually reflect the impact of the intermediaries. If you look at the first line, that's the product of credit indemnities via the small business and the bank. And I would like at the moment to focus on the last column in terms of the amount. You'll see the amount that we were able to get to small businesses through those credit indemnities from 2013 to date. SIFA Direct has been able to achieve over the last few years almost 600 million. And through the cooperative, we've been able to channel about 33 million to the economy. To joint ventures, 204. Through RFIs, 351. Through RFIs, 547. What I'm trying to reflect here, Chair, is given even the challenges that I've highlighted, there is no doubt that the role of intermediaries actually is quite significant to what we do. With SIFA just having disbursed a third of the total of what was disbursed on its own. However, Chair, maybe let me just share the pricing now. You remember we're talking about the intermediaries, but we decided to look at these intermediaries separately. If we look at cooperatives, they are in the ranges between 35% and 90%, the highest being 90. Microfinance institutions, however, range between 52 and 102, and I must say this has come down since we started engaging them. It used to be up to about 150%. Retail finance institutions is between 14.5 and 30, joint ventures between 10 and 13, and SIFA, the direct lending, is between 12.45 and 17.55, and the average at the moment of SIFA is about 13.7%. In short, given all those challenges that we saw and the costing, it was clear to us that the biggest challenge that we have are the microfinance institutions. And these are the institutions that actually service the survivalists, the mostly rural, owned by poor communities, and the micro. And so we decided that we will focus on that. And I'll tell you why we did not focus too much on cooperatives, because they also may fall in the higher bracket. Cooperative institutions are owned by members, the financial institutions. When they charge interest rates, they as members sit around the table and decide what interest rate to charge each other. Remember, they own enterprises. So they decide what to charge each other. It's their institution. When they make a profit...
Are you referring here to FSU?
Yes, okay. To FSU. when I'm saying sure that's why we're not focusing too much on correcting them. And when they make a profit, which they do, when they make a profit, they distribute the benefit, that is the dividend amongst themselves. Or one example of KwaZulu ladies, their decision is when they make profit, for the following year, they reduce their interest rates, and they can reduce them to about 20%, depending how much. So we thought that system seems to work well. It's their decision, it's their organization, and they protect each other in any case. And so, Chen, with regards to the MFIs, and I'm saying with regard to the MFIs specifically because they seem to be the problem, is that our decision moving forward, our strategy is that we will deal with MFIs only on condition they do not have more than, my share, 20% of to the end user. We know this has got serious implications because MFIs, if one looks at the location where they are located, they, to cover their cost, they probably have to charge 200%. But we partnered with people who we believe were already doing this and they've got multiple sources of finances and not just us. And therefore, our own partnership there will be limited if they charge the macro, the survivalist, the poor people, not more than 20%. But here, we also have to look holistically in the organization. What are we going to do? Because maybe there are areas, and I'm saying maybe there's also areas where we don't have to use intermediaries. Maybe, but certainly there are areas where we have to use intermediaries. So we want to expand the direct lending. It's been going, it's grown with more than 200%, 250% since 2012. We would like to build strategic alliances with chambers of commerce so as to expand our footprint. This year, I must say, is already happening. We already have spoken and made presentations and formed partnerships with some of the business chambers. Our strategy here is to work with local business chambers. So instead of working with a national chamber, we would go to your Nelson Mandela Bay municipality chamber and deal at that level with the Ekurhuleni business chamber rather than dealing with our experiences have not been very good in terms of dealing with national level of chambers. We would like to enhance investment officers' due diligence capacity. One of the things that we must remember, if you remember what I said earlier, our staff that came from Kula and Kamel always dealt with dealing with intermediaries because that was the only way they interacted with small businesses, through intermediaries. So we had to make sure that we build the capacity of our staff so that they are able to deal with clients directly. And this has been ongoing since 2012, and it still continues. We would like to build, and we are already doing this, building the capacity of the regional offices so that we can decentralize the approval of the loans. As I said, at the beginning, we had to make sure that we build the capacity of all our staff, including the region, to make sure that they now can deal with direct lending. So we have to build the capacity of our regional offices to make sure that will actually enable shorter turnaround times and we would approve more. And they are closer in any case to these businesses. What our strategy chair so far is that we would shy away from having individuals approving loans based on experience of other DFIs. Even at regional offices will have regional committees that then do the approval of the loans. We are investing heavily on technology platforms that would enable us to reach more small businesses far in terms of our geographical location and more efficiently. We would like to use technology. We follow the statistics that the use of cell phones in South Africa is quite expensive,
And that's technology these days, there's a lot you can do to that. So we would like to enhance the support to the cooperative financial institutions, that's the new name for financial services cooperatives, especially those located in rural and peri-urban areas. I must say we have been working with some cooperatives, financial cooperatives, and when we were doing this reflection, we had very good experiences of what they are doing. And I know, Chair, that you were one of the people who suggested us visiting, in particular, the KwaZulu ladies. And I must say, they are doing a fantastic job. In our view, they probably are a model of how we should be doing a micro and survivalist lending in our country. It's quite active, and we deal with a number of, my chief did show the location. There's other, in Limpopo we've got cooperatives that we deal with already. When we reflected, in fact, there's good experiences there, and we would like to enhance that. So our strategy is to build this cooperative financial institutions, and we want them to be local. We think that there's good experience in being local. In any case, the legislation requires them to be. We want to have many, many more. And the way we looked at it when we theorized it is that if you took 400 municipalities, a district or whatever level, and we had 200 cooperative financial institutions, if one looks at the model of KwaZulu ladies, 70% of their members own businesses, and so they fund those businesses. If we even disperse 100 million a year to 200 of these, we've put in the economy 200 million. And most importantly, given our experience, when we lose 1 million here and there. So far, with these big microfinance institutions that have been looking to be sustainable as we have been asking them to be, with head offices where we would put in maybe 80 million, then we lose 80 million to one organization in one local, well, maybe not, maybe they've got regional offices throughout the country. But the point is, the impact, if we were to distribute our risk, would be much better. And the enterprises, the members of cooperative institutions do the same in terms of holding each other accountable. They know exactly when an enterprise is not paying their loan, why it's not paying, and they support each other. We'd like to extend our relationships to other community organizations. And if you like, we're probably back to basics. We've got churches that actually are involved in supporting their own people in terms of economic activities. We've got traditional authorities that we are not using. And in rural areas, these are actually organizations, at least institutions that are active. We've got women's groups, we've got burial societies in every rural area. There's probably, a burial society. And they do much more than bury each other. I just came from one funeral 2 weeks ago in my village. And when a burial society stands up to give over their own contribution, it's the whole village that stands up. And when you look at what they actually do for each other, it's actually quite a strong support system, even in terms of income generation. We would like to use more local small business membership organizations, and the emphasis here is local. Over the years, we have been interacting with national small business organizations, and our experiences are not good. Things don't filter down. We would like to focus on the local. With regard to microfinance institutions, as I have said, our experiences have been that the tension I was talking about all the way tells us that probably this organization is never going to be sustainable. Now, we can make a decision as a country that we will use them and subsidize them because they reach our micro-enterprises and survivalists. But how do they reach them? If they reach them with high interest rates, that's what we want as a country. Our own view is the methodology. Remember, this was an important methodology from East Asia. Maybe the methodology is not that ideal for our environment. Maybe there are some that are successful, but you know, we have to look at the volume. One of the examples I usually give is that if in East Asia, if you have a 1 kilometer radius of a community, you will find the 100,000 micro enterprises, and you cycle to visit them and to service them. In South Africa, within the same radius of 1 kilometer, you will actually find only 1,000 enterprises, and you have to cross rivers to service them. You cannot cycle because of the environment, and therefore the cost of doing what we imported from the east in South Africa is just exorbitant. And of course, you do have then to say, is it ideal for our environment? Maybe it is in some cases, but we know that in many cases it's not working, and it's not going to be sustainable. And so we want to limit, however, our exit and support and reducing of support to these institutions, because we cannot say we are not working with microfinance institutions from today, when actually we do not have a delivery mechanism in place. So as we are enhancing the support and working with cooperatives, as we are investing in our technology platforms that can reach our communities, we will continue to work with microfinance institutions and continue to actually encourage them to look for appropriate methodologies. There are those that are successful, or at least, maybe I won't use the word successful, but seem to be sustainable. But there's issues like the cost to the end user that they need to address. So we have not stopped there. We have also looked at what are the other ways we could support those micro enterprises. Remembering, and this is something we remind ourselves all the time, our mandate is to finance micro enterprises, survivalist enterprises, small enterprises. It is not to finance intermediaries. And so we have to look at different ways of reaching the enterprises. So one of the pilots here that we are running, looking at what small businesses activities are, we're looking at the fresh produce market, where we are establishing a pilot. Currently, the first two ones is there in Mangaung, where we actually make sure that they access what they buy from the fresh produce in larger volumes, because they are limited, because that's a cash business. If you've got 100 rand, when you go to the market, you only live with tomatoes for 100 rand. But if they can expand and be able, even if they have 100 rand, but live with tomatoes for 500 rand and be able to sell those for 750, at least you've increased their revenue. So we're looking at that check, and we are working with the market themselves, because it's a very tightly managed business. It's very efficient, by the way. It's a very efficient business and system. It took quite a long time for us to form that partnership, because they didn't understand what we're talking about, because all they understand is, you brought 100 grand, here's tomatoes for 100 grand. And we had to work with them. And so there will be short-term credit facilities for small businesses and those who buy the produce. And interest rates will not be more than 10%. Chair, I must say, this is I'm challenging my management that the cap should be what the current FIFA cap is. It cannot be more than 17.55%. And they are looking at how they are going to make that happen. We also looked at other supplies that small businesses require to carry out their businesses. And so we're looking at supplier credit programs. One of those that we already are advanced in is the construction, where small businesses can access their building materials and the skill sector. And critically here is what we have been able to achieve, where small businesses would access some of these on credit at no interest rate for a minimum of 30 years. 30-day shops. Did I say that?
Not a bad idea.
But the point is that if a small business is able to turn that around at no interest, that becomes quite important for their own business in terms of making it sustainable. We are encouraging the microfinance institutions, recognizing that over the time they have built capabilities, they have built a clientele base, they have built relationships in the with the micro enterprises. We're encouraging them to make some of their branches and make them cooperative. So facilitate that, because a branch will be a community. Facilitate that those borrowers in their particular branch actually form a cooperative. And of course, for us, this is important because they start to also build savings, so that they start to build assets from the profits that they are making. We also are looking at solutions where we partner with large corporates, tapping on their commitment for enterprise development, so in their supply chain, so that we can actually support the small businesses. One of the examples of this that we have already signed is with PRASA, where PRASA in the rolling stock actually have put aside certain contracts for small businesses, and we've signed an agreement with PRASA that will finance, and we went for the lower level. I think it's up to $1 million in terms of the contracts that they'll get, FIFA will finance for. In summary, Chair, in terms of the intermediaries, we have absorbed the lessons. We will work with intermediaries on condition that they share the same development objectives of making sure that micro enterprises access the loans at interest rates that are not beyond 20%. We will also work with intermediaries that are sector specific, because we believe that they will bring better knowledge and specific knowledge in terms of lending, and in particular to technical support to the small businesses. We will continue to encourage the banks to actually lend to small businesses, and hopefully they will utilize our guarantee scheme more than they do at the moment. We have interacted with banks, and we've redesigned the product to respond to the challenges and the issues that the banks raise on why they have not been using it. We have already seen a little bit of take-up of the guarantee. We will continue to be involved as FIFA with joint venture funds, because, for example, in geographical areas or in specific sectors, again, will be those that actually respond to our issues. We will work very closely with DDI, with the Cooperative Development Agency, to actually make sure that there are more CFIs, as they are called now, that are established, that are strengthened to be able to provide enterprise lending. I must say, Chair, up front, there are legislative issues that need to be addressed as we achieve that. For example, only in terms of the current legislation, is it called regulation or registration? Is it a regulation?
Prudential regulation.
Yeah. They are only allowed to lend out 15% of their capital. So that's a limitation. They are also only allowed to have members who live within a particular radius. So we will need your support. My assessment, and I've done some work in my capacity as a consultant in this area, one of the things that has not happened is that regulation or that legislation did not take the new development such as technology. I may be living in Johannesburg, but I'm from, where am I from? Fort Lizard or Umtata, one of the two. And even though I live in Johannesburg, I want to save at least R1,000 every month as a way of supporting the development of my community back home. And with technology, I don't have to go through on the line. It's just a transfer. And I think that the regulation would need to be revisited to take into account some of this. My assessment, and this is a personal assessment, Chair, is that the current regulation is a replica of what used to regulate the SACCOs those days. You know, you can tell how old I am. Because the SACCOs were workplace-based. You see, that's the point, Chair. So it was space-based, and it was about workers' saving. It did not think of workers or their savings contributing to the economy in terms of expanding the economy so that there's more workers and therefore there's more savings. So, Chair, I think we'll need your support in terms of that. Chair, I will end my presentation here, and thank you very much for being patient to listen once I tell this long story. But I trust that we can engage on this, and we are open, Chair, for suggestions in terms of our strategy and comments so that we can still enhance our strategy. It's a journey for us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that was mouthful. And we would like also to thank you for listening and really making sure that you service those that you are mandated to service. It's quite hard to hear what you've been saying because it shows that really what the portfolio committee says, you listen to it while you can because what we are saying, you might not have the skill and expertise. You have that. So you took what we've been saying and then you put your skill and expertise into it and then came up with something that in my ear quite pleasing to hear. So we need really to look deeper into the strategy. Members, you've heard this is the approach that people are going to be taking. They need our support. They need to hear our views on this. Sergeant, the Marine, the Defense, and that also.
Thank you very much, Jay. Thank you for the presentation from Stephen. I just have to ask a question. Actually, there's a little bit of line of when you visit your offices at the end of the website visit about 3 years ago, where I was asking you for some success stories. What I'd like to see is the money that the government putting in, that we actually are getting good results in that money, that we are seeing successful organizations being created, that we've seen economic development that creates as well. And I think what's quite interesting there is that if you look at the slide where it says that matches the sea for lending activities, you can see, for example, that you're directly using constitutes a third of all the money you've distributed, so it constitutes 559 million. What's also registered is you've got 446 SMEs that you're supporting. So by that calculation, the average size of your loan that you've put out is just over 100 rand, like 1.1, 1.2 million rand, which is fairly significant size loans. What I'd like, and I know you probably don't have an answer to it, but maybe you can give it to us, from those 446, how many of those are performing loans and are current? And I think what might be quite good, because those are fairly large loans, at some point in the future they come and report to us and some of the success stories on that, because it is a fairly significant amount of money you're handing out to people. And I think what we'd like to be told is some of those successful stories, because I think as a committee we want to see that some of the money being involved in, and that we are getting the results that we want.
Okay, thank you.
I would just like to go back to that targeted groups that you have indicated. The first thing on that one is that you have indicated that 2% of the loans would go to people.
Can you give us the slide number?
That's on page 6.
Is there like that?
On page 6.
Yeah.
You said that 2% of people living with disabilities. I'm not quite sure whether that is 2% because of the employment equity where 2% have been employed. Now, if that is the case, it's actually an insult. Because say a minimum of 2%, it might be an indication. Because if you just work on 2%, you're actually telling people with disabilities that's all that you can do. And often you find with people with disabilities more abilities than able-bodied people will have. So if that's the line of thinking, you will have to change that. Because there are actually no limits to a person in a wheelchair or on crutches. You know, their mind is as productive as in able-bodied. So you cannot limit them, especially in your rural area, where you often find a big concentration of people with disabilities.
Okay.
So that's going to be limited. Mm-hmm. That's the first point. And secondly, if you look at DTI's website, you look at the new Ministry of School Enterprises, you will find that there's a vast amount of financial institutions that provide loans, either NEF or so many of the institutions. I just want to know whether there are any coordination taking place. First of all, though, one wouldn't like to see too many duplications, because that means extra costs. Because often you find that the one will give from 5,000 to 50,000, the other one will give from 10,000 to 5 million, and the other one will give from 20,000 to 50 million. So there's a huge overlap, and it seems like it's a huge lot of duplication that can take place, which is extra cost because it's repeated in each of these. So I want to know the cooperation and coordination between the, if I can use a phrase for lack of a better word, the governmental, financial, industry, or small and medium enterprises.
FDIs, we call them financial development, finance development enterprises.
Yeah, but just to, as a broad thing.
Not
GFI.
Yes. What is it?
Development finance.
Oh, GFI, yes.
So there's just so many of them. So, you know, that you might find in one town offices of three or four where it could have been combined into one. Just that. Then, secondly, I want to know whether, what is your specifically CIFA relationship then with DTI, portfolio committee as well, and small enterprise development. And also whether when you look at partnerships, whether you look at, and I'm not quite sure whether there's a private institution, but like business partners,
mm-hmm.
who is servicing small businesses, but it seems like they're working in competition. Or there are many others that work, seems like they're working in competition with each other, compared to rather a collaboration to promote small businesses. Shepard, I've got more questions, but I think
that's enough. You,
yeah,
call, you come later on, yes. That is the end, then. Thank you
very much,
Mr. Marek, you should have your phone.
We appreciate the presentation by Shifa. It is very interesting, you know, to note how they unpack their ideas about how they intend to bring in the improvement. A lot of work has obviously gone into the presentation. But let me quickly indicate something, you know. As we visited the Shifa's office, there is an observation that we made, which I think speaks also to the mindset. We were just going through the input, you begin to feel that there is this intention to try and produce something. We observed the simplicity that is associated with the office of Shifa, including the office of the chief executive. Everything there is simplicity. I mean, that is the main thing. So it gives you an indication important for us to say we appreciate it. But on the presentation, I think no one can expect FIFA to, you know, just imagine to be able to move away from the problems of the past, the current issues that we are concerned. Obviously, that is going to take a little bit of time, but we appreciate that the first step has been taken because they are trying to develop some ideas. I hear the chairperson emphasizing the fact that the cooperative finance institutes, they speak with their members, they agree with their members on all the things they have been spoken. That is why the chairperson. However, for them to help this person, I think, first has to be a member. In other words, they help only their members. Now, I think the mandate of the state is to say all cooperatives, all small businesses, they need to be assisted. The overall mandate states to be super. And if there are problems there, you know, with the cooperatives, with the others, MFIs and so on, at the end of the day, the bus stops with you. So I think while it is important to note that the CFIs speak to the members and they make arrangements and so on, I think CFA still needs to have a mechanism, an oversight mechanism over all the activities that they are involved in, and cannot leave that responsibility, you know, to the institutions, because they are seem to be running them, you know, profit at the end of the day. There is that particular responsibility that lies with the people. And then on the expansion of the direct lending loan to Chequers, CFA is coming up with the innovative ideas here. And I think they are moving in the correct direction. But if the chair could try and elaborate, if they're saying the single enhancing investment officers' duties and capacity, what are they really going to try and do, given the limitations that they themselves are exposed to? Building capacity of regional offices, enabling different transitions for people. Yes, on paper that is very good, but practically, how are you going to do that? And the technology part of it as well. I think we need to hear a little bit more about that chapter. And I think the interest rate level they're a tricky animal for us to tackle. Because as the chairperson indicated, there are also different legal issues. For instance, these institutions are not allowed to borrow out more than 15%. Is it 15 or 50?
1.5.
1.5 now, you know. I think that is a little bit unacceptable. But the question is then, what happens to the rest of the money? You know, which goes against what we expect to see happening, but those are issues, I think, for the PC, those are issues that we later on need also to look into the legislative part of it. I think General Chairperson, we appreciate the initiative taken by CIPA, but I think they are going to have to quantify their plans. They are also going to have to look at the broader picture. So that they don't contradict themselves as they proceed, they don't need to ensure that they meet their money. I'll pause there for the purpose of the day.
Thanks. That's it. Yes,
let me also join my colleagues to welcome the presentation. It really shows that people are trying to take the decision forward. Though I'm also challenged on the issue of the target market, especially on the issue of you knowing them being in the high range of unemployment. But then 50% that is better. So I was just wondering, well, what motivates this model, the formula? Where does this formula come from? It is not changeable. Can't you change it maybe financially? If it's 50% in this year, next year it becomes a big year. That's one. And then two is that what is the strategy to achieve the rural area? Because I haven't educated about it. And lastly, if you continue funding businesses, what is your ex-church, the only driver, those who were attending church and stop attending? What is the program with those funded businesses that are not doing well? What are you doing? I'm leaving them behind.
Is there any practice that you are putting in place and we need to launch this business because you are content and anything? Thank you. Thanks, Mansoor. But we're beginning.
Thank you very much. Much really wish to appreciate the Christian. But what the only thing which I wish to understand, how does FIFA think they can evaluate and monitor the work of the intermediary? Secondly, you see, I think we need really to what you've happened in the past. It's a question of them giving the money, which they know, if you have some or you never carry the bank, you give them 50 billion, 50, 500,000. Now, this of capacity.
And you can just put the adults on silence to close them if you
can. I think the issue of capacity building is very much important, particularly on financial management. On this one, the same as the strategic direction. You were talking about finance microenterprises through MIS is not sustainable. I wonder if you'd like to have a mention of this to the minister when I discuss it, because I think it's very important. Thanks.
Thank you,
Dr.
Okay. So, my rest, you still have additional questions?
Yes, the approach in terms of your approach to intermediaries is that an approach only by yourself, in other words, CIFA, or is that a government? That is a general policy. Again, you're referring to the various development finance institutions and organizations in the government domain. You know, if you don't have a similar approach, then it can cause confusion among people out there, small business, medium businesses. That is the one issue. The other one is the chair of on this map of South Africa, where you had on your page 9, I see that there is, especially in the Northern Cape and the Eastern Cape, there are incredibly few service centers, if I can use a collective word. And especially in the Eastern Cape, I remember in the past that we visited the Eastern Cape, there's a huge need and requirement for assistance. And it seems there are so few that one asks, now how can you properly serve the market if you don't have access to it? Again, people are in the rural area, there are no necessities. This seems to me, I mean, compare that to Limpopo or the Western Cape or even the Free State, then you will see that it seems like just an enormous underrepresentation of access facilities to the community. Thank you.
Was the Eastern Cape not part of the pilot, the direct lending pilot?
It was.
Okay. But is it indicated here as part of that? Because I think in the system.
Yeah, you did mention
the pilot was in East London, in the Eastern Gate. So is the East London office is actually indicated there. But in my response, I'll also share the challenges.
So it's part of the regional office?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll also.
All right. I take it that members have asked their questions. Can I then add to the questions asked by members? I like the fact that you came with the whole matter from the origin, where the whole FIFA Ramaf originated to cater for small, medium enterprises and also the cooperatives, inclusive of also survivors. I like the fact that the model where we sort of have taken from addresses certain, you know, conditions that are different from South Africa. I think we are in agreement there. Which is the Grameen model, which is the one. So it addresses different things. And I think we agree that because when you look at the Northern Cape, for instance, where you have a very small, you know, footprint there, it shows that how difficult is our situation compared to a rural India, for instance, or Pakistan. That will be quite different here. Areas. So I think that's a mistake that South Africa, we normally do in South Africa, we just learn and borrow as it is without really putting it into our own conditions so that it suits our conditions. This is another lesson that I hope that is going to be learned with others also as we proceed, as we go forward, especially with your new approach. I'm hoping that will help, because I can see that in some of your final slides you are also borrowing from the Brazilian model. Yeah. And it's quite clear that also this, although Brazil is more or less, I think, it's closer to us, but their model is built on their overall country development plan or strategy. So I'm not sure how if ours look into our general development plan, so that we are able then to reach out. For instance, if we say we have fewer farmers in South Africa, and when we look at the Brazilian model, they develop household farmers, you know, for food security purposes and also for income generation purposes. I think I just want to find out if we have the bill for that into what we're saying. And then also, I like the fact that you are using the supplier credit program, which I don't know why didn't use it under the fresh produce market program. Is the 18 saying that we have 18 fresh produce markets in South Africa? And where are they? And I can see that one of our programs in terms of NGP, when you look at the job drivers, one of the job drivers is agriculture and agro-processing. So how is this going to assist? Because yes, they're saying we need to assist our lender to be able to access cheaper products so that they can also afford for affordability purposes and also for profit making purposes. How then are we going to ensure that we, while doing that, we build that into the general country's, you know, outcry on food distribution that relates to food security issues and also related, because previously we used to have what we called poverty alleviation programs.
Mm.
That I think when we came up with some of the programs, especially the summer program, it did not incorporate, you know, the teaching or the learning, the outcome, learning outcomes from those particular programs. As a result, we forced a lot. Hence, we had to change and then bring it. But then, I'm a bit confused when it comes to CFI, because you're saying how you, last time I thought I heard you say you're no longer responsible for corporate directly. I got confused even last time. But I hear now you are coming very confident on this, saying we are and we're continuing to support, and which to me is actually a relief. Because I thought if here is a SIVA which is supposed to be dealing with the issues, but that, you know, there, it was like you are relegating your responsibility and you are giving it to now to the board now. And I was just, I'm to the new agents, and I was like, okay, will the new agents be able to finance with as new as they will they be able to understand the whole, you know, issues around cooperatives and so forth? Why can't you continue and be able to hand over, if you have to hand over in the process, something that you also understand, you know, to be the actual situation or the actual status of cooperatives in South Africa. So I'm relieved, I must be honest, to hear that you are now taking charge of the cooperatives. But I want to also indicate that cooperatives is governed by law. They are governed by law. Whatever is there, I agree. But regulations are not supposed to differ from the actual legislation. They actually must be able to support the legislation. And that's why I understand the new legislation. It was trying to cover, to take care of the issues that you've raised. So I might not have really gone through it properly, especially after it was enacted, because I'm not sure what changes were made afterwards. It is important that we revisit and see where are the issues, or if you can, please put down all the areas that you feel we need to look into as the committee, so that we can be able to propose to the Trade and Industry Committee, because they are the ones who are responsible for that. I'm not sure in terms of the transfer of functions, whether they transfer that to the Business Development Department. But I must say I'm really pleased with what you're coming up with here. The only issue here is around the expansion of direct lending through associations or chambers. How many, you are not giving us, you know, the picture of the chambers, since I know you tried at one stage to do that, but I think it would benefit even new members if you were to give us the picture of what you're talking about, and how do you think your expansion strategy will assist, you know, small, not only small, but emerging and small, medium enterprises in South Africa through this chamber. Because I know for the fact that some chambers are held and strengthened by the leadership squabbles, and as a result, one wonders if they are able then to really get down to the actual business that they were created for. And how safe will that money be, you know, if it's given to people who are really not having their priorities right, if I were to say that. So if you can just give a complete picture of what is happening as far as the Chambers of Commerce are concerned in South Africa. And even if you were to go province by province so that we can see if you do not, you cannot come up with additional, you know, responsibility of assisting in building up such, well, of course, with the help of the Small Business Development Department. Why I'm saying that is because of your footprint, like members have actually alluded to. It doesn't please at all, especially in the rural provinces. Because I'm worried that even this strategy of yours might be enhancing what is already in place and still leaving out those people that we feel are most important to some of us. I had other questions, but I think I'm taking too long. I'm interested in this supplier credit program, especially your pilot initiative in the construction and steel sector. Why I'm saying that is because the two are still in the competition authorities, under scrutiny of the competition of authorities of the country. And I'm not sure if we do understand the challenges faced by the industry, especially our small and emerging businesses, was really trying to enter into the business itself. Whether they really understand, or are we still going to continue financing those that are already within, you know, the monopoly of the two sectors? Because especially in the supply area, we have serious challenges, especially with building material and so forth. The steel sector, I know that we still have a problem. And what role are you playing then to unravel that while you are assisting SMMEs into that sector through financing? What else are you doing so that you are able to open doors for them? They don't get frustrated in the process and are not able to refund your money, and you end up writing off, you know, their debts because they couldn't survive within, you know, the market itself. I mean, the sector itself. Yeah, I think those are the main questions. Oh, sorry. No, it's let's leave it because I think you answer the question. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I must ask from forward to Honorable Member Atkinson. Actually, when you were in our offices, you asked this question. And we promised you that we'll bring you the success story. While it's somewhere in the computers, we did not bring it. And I do want to apologize. I think we sort of focused on answering the specific question. But I think we won't wait until we come back. We'll, our annual report captures a long list of success stories. Our last financial year annual report. We'll organize for that to be dropped in your office sometime today. We'll just phone our regional office here as soon as we leave to please drop a copy of the annual report, which does detail a number of them. However, in terms of your question on the performance of the portfolio, I've told my chief to be ready to respond to that question. Thank you very much for accepting our apology. I must say, in terms of this target group, the question on why only 2%, I must upfront say we have not applied ourselves outside what has been the employment kind of target. we said to ourselves, let's in fact we even did better than the employment target, but we wanted to first experience, you know, FIFA being about 3 years old, almost 3 years old, we said we need to experience how we are actually going to work in this area. I can tell you that it's probably more than chance than by design. And it's one of the areas, we've been asked this question before, and it's one of the areas that we accept that we still have a whole lot of work to do. For example, one of the thoughts that we had is to actually visit the institutions like your father of the blind, of the, you know, the deaf and whatever, because there's a lot that's happening there. How can we, but we not scientifically, that's what I'm trying to say, really come up with this. We certainly will be coming back with a more scientific percentage. At the moment, we used kind of the employment kind of the route, which we understand that it is a challenge when we're looking at self-employment. And so we'll improve on that when we come to talk to you again. In terms of coordination and cooperation with other DFIs, you will remember that first we are a subsidiary of the largest DFI in the country. And so that coordination and cooperation is almost automatic, given where we are. Frankly, IDC has supported us quite a lot in terms of resources, as in people. As you know, they've invested almost $1 billion in the organization. And so we cooperate with them quite a lot. We continue to actually go on their own experiences too, as we design our own new policies. At a national level, the other DFI would be NEF. Yes, there is certainly a lot of cooperation with NEF. I can share with you that when NEF was facing challenges of capitalization, and they had their staff members idle, and we wanted to grow our direct lending quickly, we actually signed a cooperation agreement where they actually gave us some of the staff members that were idle. However, in terms of the mandate, although we can say NEF is about black economic empowerment funding, but there has lately been a sort of a creep into small businesses, because now they also fund 250,000 upward. But we cooperate in this area. In fact, there are regions where literally our offices are next door, so that in the back office we are able to talk, to provide support each other. But there's no doubt that in that area there is some overlap. But we continue to talk even about the overlap, so that we don't duplicate our services in the different areas. In terms of DTI and the Small Business Department, let me start with DTI. Most of the resources, whether they eat in terms of incentives or policies that small businesses have to comply with or benefit from, still reside within DTI. So DTI is a permanent communique for us, because there's a lot that is still there. For example, even in terms of these cooperatives we're talking about, as the minister, as the chair was saying, DTI is responsible for the new cooperative development agency, and we continue to engage them. What shape is it going to take? When is it going to take off? What is it that we are doing that will move to that agency? But I'll talk a little bit more about the result of that a little later. The Small Business Development Department, as you know, this is a new department, but we talk to the department all the time. In fact, the department participated in our strategic planning session, because we have to talk to them. We have made presentations to the Portfolio Committee of Small Business. They call us anytime they would like, and we are in touch with the DG, the acting DG, and the ministry, and the portfolio committee. There are things, there are certain activities in our portfolio that even before we make certain decisions, because of the space that they occupy, we will bounce our decisions with the ministry. before we actually take decisions. So we continue to cooperate and communicate with the Small Business Department. And as I say, we also have been invited more than once to the Portfolio Committee of the Small Business and make presentations. Business partners. Business partners is what is called strategic literature. In strategy literature, it's called competition that you collaborate with. That's what they are. You may know that we have through CIFA, government owns 20% of business partners. We have programs as CIFA that over the years we have actually partnered specifically on with business partners, recognizing their specific skill on new startup business programs. And we had a fund, in fact, that we jointly put together that they managed for some years, and that fund is getting to the end now. So that we've cooperated with them over many years, and we continue to talk to them because we are still a shareholder in business partners. We recognize that strength, there's no doubt about that, and we share a lot. In fact, in our discussions with them, they've even offered that we can actually use their training, and we are training our staff members. So we cooperate with them quite intensely. In fact, my chief had a meeting, one of his last meetings in December, was with the MD of business partners, just talking about where are you, what are you doing, what are we share experiences. They are sharing a lot of experiences with us. Yes, they do. We don't consider them as competition because they've been long in the game. They probably consider us as competition in some cases, but we collaborate quite strongly. In terms of
business partners,
it's what used to be Small Business Development Corporation, SBDC.
Yeah.
In fact, they are doing a lot of work in Africa. So they've taken their experience and positioned themselves to be an to provide services throughout Africa. So they've got a strong consulting arm, if you like, of fund management and the lot.
Okay. Of course.
In terms of the approach to intermediaries, I'm incorporating your later question so that I can move systematically. Are FIFA policies and government policies similar? And do we have similar approaches to other DFIs? I would say FIFA is informed by government policies. However, we have a responsibility to give feedback to government based on our experiences in terms of the policy. And yes, the department, Minister Patel, has raised a lot of questions also on intermediaries. We continue to talk and make presentations, and he challenges us. So yes, we are moving together the direction that we are moving. Similar to other DFIs, I would say yes, but to a certain extent, because not all DFIs actually use intermediaries. For instance, if you think of the provincial development, what used to be provincial development corporations, they lend directly rather than using intermediaries. The map, yes, our map, in fact, we look at that map also. And it has to be a reminder to us that we have a lot of work in certain areas. But if I talk particularly the Eastern Cape, what happened with the Eastern Cape is that when SAMEF was still, strong, they actually had a lot of MFIs in that space that is now empty, which failed. And that failure means that we have to come in. Which we have to a certain extent. We started, shall I say, because we've not exhausted what we need to do. For example, we in certain areas we have collocated with where we did not have an office and CIDA had an office. We've negotiated with CEDA when we actually co-locate with CEDA, and we service the small businesses from that office, same with IGC. In fact, we will be in Mthatha in a few weeks. IGC has opened an office there, and we've negotiated with IGC to share the office space, because it's always quicker for us if we look at existing infrastructure. However, we are nowhere near what we are supposed to do in the Eastern Cape especially, because Northern Cape you can say it's because it's big and it's quite sparsely populated, but in the Eastern Cape we are far behind in terms of what we need to do. As I say, we are still recovering from losing those institutions that some have had established but have gone under, and we have to recreate new structures there. However, if one looks at this with our strategic way forward, and I may be answering one of the questions, Chair, that you asked on this technology, extension of the technology. One of the things that we would like to do with our technology is to make sure that if we have a moment to take a church in Queenstown that once that already supports their own people for income generating activities, which is what a survivalist is, we would like to be able to capture the application in Queenstown from a survivalist in it gets captured into our technology. So the church will have an arrangement with them. The people go to that church and say, I want to apply for this and this and that, and it just enters in the technology. And technology does it hopefully within 24 hours, depending on the on the simplicity and the complexity of the transaction. And it says approved within 24 hours. So if you want to change me, you can. Shall I say 48 hours? 48 hours. Now, when we rely on institutions and organizations that know the people, because what becomes a challenge for this, for the far client, is knowing the client. And when you rely on local organizations, you rely on the fact that they know each other, or of each other, at least, you know, there'll be some kind of connection. They enter that, and our system says approved. And then within a few days, and hopefully hours, the money is dispersed to the bank account of the survivalist. Now, as was said, it doesn't add there, because the problem is that this person, it may be the first time they manage a loan. Then that church we will have an agreement with to provide business support to those people that came through them, give them the support, give them the, you know, encourage them, visit them, so that we're also ensuring that we get paid back. That's basically how we see the technology helping us. That's why I was saying, with technology, we should be able to service some, not all, of the clients that are serviced by the intermediaries. So the Eastern Cape, I do accept that you should hold us accountable, you know, to make sure that in a few months, at least there's some more population there. As I say, we are recovering from those institutions that failed in that area. I take the question, or maybe more comment, very seriously, that of the cooperatives servicing their members. This is very important, and we are cognizant of the fact that ours is to support all small businesses, whether they are members or not. We're keeping track of this. What we are relying on is that whilst we have cooperatives in the same area, we have other services such as funds that are servicing the same small businesses. So it's not to say we're relying solely on the cooperative. But I must say, if our experience ends up being the similar experience that we see from the ones that we're currently working with, we have too few for us to actually say it's a model. if our experience ends up like that, we'd like to encourage more small businesses to belong to such organizations, because it seems to be, for us, once you're running your business, you also are part of a financial institution that supports your business, and you still make profit from that institution if it makes profit. However, we are aware that not everybody will want to cooperate with others, and we must continue to have these parallel programs that support them.
Can I just keep in the I think it's important also to say to the Christian that, you know, our cooperatives are defined by law how to function. You have to be a member, you have to be not less than 10, you have to be have an account where you all contributed, hence you sit together and then define how you're going to be doing business through your constitution. It's unlike, you know, your RFIs and MFIs and all others, where at least you're supporting businesses that are individualistic or family businesses and so forth. This one is a cooperative. It's defined by law how it's supposed to function and so forth. And like we heard that the regulations now, it means they are being regulated even further in terms of how they should function. Perhaps when we do the workshop on the Act itself, the Cooperative Act, is it 2014? Is it 2014? Yes. That's the amended one. We'll look into those things and then see where we can perhaps assist, because I've seen the previous law that was amended. It was too stringent in terms of, you know, allowing people to join and so forth. That's why I said this one I'm not sure. So I think we need to revisit that, look at it so that we can and then also on the examples that you've given, it works well even KwaZulu-Natal. I think in the villages, the one you saw is in Devon.
Yes.
There are other ones in the villages where they literally, they have a very good bank, small micro financing. The model is very good. They go out there, and then how they collect, and then how they find each other is quite interesting also to learn. So that you learn from two scenarios, the rural-based scenario and the urban-based scenario, it asks you also to see how successful this thing is. I thought I should just add on that.
Thank you very much, Chair. One of the questions that was raised is then not just providing the finance. What we do over and above the money that they would lend to small businesses is to actually provide them the CFI with funding to make sure that the mentoring, the post-loan support, business support to the business. But thank you for raising this, because it's something that we have to monitor all the way, that we are not actually excluding some of the small businesses that are not members of this. In terms of, I think I've elaborated a bit on the direct lending, the how it was asked. In terms of the due diligence capacity, when I made my presentation, I tried to draw a picture that you had a cooler and you had a commerce that were both working through and only through intermediaries. So the skills of your staff end up being skills and competencies that are based on working with intermediaries and not with the small businesses. And over time, the kind of questions you ask are not the questions you would ask for small businesses. You would be asking from the intermediaries. So we've had to build the due diligence capacity, because instead of going now to look at the finances of this big organization, you have to go to a business and look at the business, and it's not just financial. You're actually looking at how is the business going to run and looking at the viability of the business, where are the gaps, because you have to make sure that we identify the gaps as we are doing the due diligence, so that we're aware of some of the interventions that we need to put in place earlier. So that's the kind of training that is being done, and the training is both in classroom sitting space like that. Again, we use IGB's capacity a lot. They've got a training academy that we use. We've also already also partnered with FNB at some stage to train our staff. This is important. It may not sound relevant, but our staff must know why they should not do things like the bank. And the only way to know that is to know what the bank asks for. And so how would we be intervening so that we actually don't operate like the commercial bank?
I think that there was a question about the interest rates. And I think that the discussion of interest rates is an ongoing discussion. As we also, as FIFA, are implementing some of this and building up the knowledge and looking at efficiencies. For example, we truly hope that the use of technology is going to end up with much reduced cost of delivering the products to the small businesses. And if that happens, it must directly talk to the interest rate that we charge, because part of the interest rate margin is really about the cost of delivering the product. And if it's reducing, we should see a direct reduction of the interest rate. But Chair, what I was thinking as we were talking about this is we're talking about all these strategies. Maybe when we come, as we usually come, to present a corporate plan to the committee, we should also be talking about an implementation plan, where, for example, we will be saying, let's say with cooperatives, we're looking at these readings and so many for this current financial year that will support, so that there's a better feel of interpreting the strategies into actual activities that will be undertaking.
I don't know, in corporate you call it an implementation plan, government they call it APP, annual performance plan.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is prescribed.
So I think we have to focus on the
but what I wanted to ask follow up on, there's no other follow up on this instruction.
Mm.
Are they not built up into, I mean, the administrative costs and on all those processing costs that you include?
Mm.
Are they not actually being assisted through the money that government is transferring to you?
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, I'm thinking in the sense that the government is sort of taking away from you in order for you not to then put that into a custom.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying to find out. If you build it up within your cost, then it means that you're being unfavorable to the beneficiary. Isn't it like that?
I hear you.
Uh-huh.
It is like that, Chair. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the subsidy that government puts in, it does not take care of everything.
Mm.
We expect CIFA itself to be more efficient as we move out of the merger issues. We expect to be more efficient, but we always just look at if CIFA were efficient, what is the interest? What is the administrative component of the margin of the interest rate that we would have to charge? And then with the money that we are receiving from government, how do you reduce it? The interest. So we apply it for reduction. And that's how we end up with your like 12.55% that we were talking about. But I'm saying, Chair, because remember, even the money that we're going to invest in technology is a government grant. And the more we invest that, the more government must experience the reduction of the cost.
Mm-hmm.
We have, Chair, I don't want to make too many promises, I keep making a lot of promises. We have it here, but it's not in the same thing. But we focused on answering the question, but we do have a breakdown of how we actually come up with the interest rate and how we apply the government grant to end up with a lower interest rate. But still, I do believe that parallel to that, government is then going to give us a grant to invest in the technology. And that must make us even more efficient than what we said ideally we should be. And it should directly impact by way of reduction of the interest rates. Further, if I may. Further, not just where it is.
Well, I take cognizance that of the fact that today you came in for the strategy. And then you still come back to the issues. You know, there I had other colleagues asking the same questions that really need specific time and the focus. and there are other issues that we haven't finalized and dealt with before. I think we have to deal with that.
I think the interest rate will form part of a presentation of the COVID plan, because our financial modeling would have been based on that, so part of the COVID plan. So when we come for the COVID plan, we will be talking about it, about the interest rate and
and how you work the whether it's target the group percentages. Then how you also work out, I think there was a question around the demographics, how to distribute, how to work out that distribution as a percentage, because it's quite important in as far as your plan is concerned. We need to be seeing going forward.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just continue with the I'll leave the target, the question on the target, on what the formula for the target might be. The strategy to reach rural areas, I thought I won't leave it to my chief this one, because I'm a rural girl and it's very important for me that we actually reach rural areas. No, I am chief. There's a lot I can tell. I go there every weekend, and I now have an enterprise in rural areas, so I'm going to benefit from FIFA too. Indeed, when we look at these intermediaries, we took cognizance of the fact that some of them do operate in rural areas. I mean, Limpopo is probably the most covered. Mpumalanga is also most covered by some of these MFIs. And when you start to look at some of the rural areas in the Eastern Cape and the Lodge, that's not so. Our strategy of the cooperative, which is one of the reasons we decided that even if the mandate creep, we will actually be active in this, it actually helps us to reach even the rural areas. The technology will help us reach rural areas. So in terms of our strategy going forward, what is the percentage like initially of rural enterprises? We reached about 45%, but that includes townships, which is very urban. But we actually are focusing on this, and it's one of the things that we're measuring. Going forward, the technology capability that we are building, we want to make sure we reach more rural enterprises. The cooperatives, we realize that it's probably the only way you can reach those rural enterprises, and they also get the support that they require. And when businesses are not doing well, which we experience all the time, because remember that we already lend to small businesses because they can't get money from the bank. And it means when they come to us, they already need support. And so we actually have, that's why we emphasize the post-mentoring programs, business support, technical skills. We also have partnerships with organizations. If it's not the RFIs or the cooperatives, the intermediaries or the cooperatives that we work with, we also look outside to those organizations that can provide specifically the support, such as the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants is a partner, although that's still, again, urban-based. But our view is, when it comes to rural enterprises, we need to build those cooperatives that are out there to be able to provide that support. There was a question on how we hope to monitor and evaluate intermediaries. I may say that because of history, pre-merger history, CIFA has got a stronger capacity to monitor and evaluate intermediaries, because both Kula and SAMEF were in that space. Have we done it well? No, I can tell you, not that well. Why? Chair, I don't know if I how open I can be in this meeting. Because I don't want to go to
prison of Menor Nare.
There are intermediaries. that specifically set themselves up to rob Kula, Samef, and maybe now Siva of the resources. That's the reality. And sometimes it takes us a bit long to realize that, wow, this is the wrong partner. So I'm trying to say, the corruption that we're experiencing in the country does find itself even into the space we operate in. Why I'm saying this? Because we may be monitoring the honest way in terms of the capacity that we have. And it's only later that we realize that actually, some of these people are not don't share the same developmental objectives that we share. So we all will always have challenge of being quite vigilant as we form the partners, first of all, but also as we monitor and evaluate the intermediaries. So I hope that does not find itself to the minutes of the meeting.
No, it shouldn't.
And yes, of course, one of the post-loan support services is financial management. We think that's very important. Where ASIFA office is located, we've got pictures, but maybe we can share with the committee the actual addresses. We would appreciate, and I think previously the committee did that quite often. As a board, we do that also. When I go home, I'll go and check what's happening in the office down the line, go in as a client and ask for a loan and see. We would appreciate members to actually do that on a continuous basis with a view of giving us feedback so that we are able to. It's one way we will improve. And so we'll provide the committee with the specific addresses of the SIFA offices, also of the partnerships where we are co-located. I've already said that the sustainability or the lack thereof the question thereof is actually something that we continuously discuss with the minister, and the minister sort of asks us specific questions. And we sometimes battle to answer the minister's questions, and we have to go back to the intermediaries and talk and find new information. I think it's a discussion that has been going on between the portfolio committee, challenging through the ministry, challenging SIFA. Our shareholder IGC has really kept us on our toes also. And I think it's one of the reasons we've come to accept the reality and try and develop alternative strategies. Okay, I think now I'm coming to your questions quickly, not all of them. Yes, in fact, in November, myself and the chief and one of our directors were in Brazil, together with IGC. We saw some nice models there, and I must say some of the strategies actually were directly informed by some of the experiences we saw there, because Brazil has got similarities in terms of our South African environment. We think that, if I may jump to the picture of the Chambers of Commerce, and then I'll ask my colleague, if you still have time, Chair, to talk on the supplier support, specifically just in 2 minutes in relation to construction and the steel industry. Chair, the Chambers of Commerce, as you know, we tried to talk to Chambers of Commerce at national level. We tried bringing them together to form programs. They never worked because there's too many politics at the national level. We then said, let's go into chambers at the local level. To give you a concrete example, we went into the Nelson Mandela Bay municipality chamber. Now the members of the chamber affiliate to the chamber, even if they do affiliate to NACOC at another. But when you talk to them at that level, you're actually talking to their local needs and to them directly. Because, for instance, we've had a workshop with the small businesses there, because 8% of their members, in fact, are small businesses. And then we've formed a partnership because they've got a small business desk where our applications as SIFA are always available in that desk. We train the person who is responsible for the SMME desk at the chamber with the person that we found there to make sure that the person can answer the questions in relation to our application. And our Botswana office is interacting on an ongoing basis. And I must say we've already had loans that have been distributed to small businesses in that environment as a result of that intervention. And we're looking at, I don't know if there's other chambers, chief, that we've already interacted and formed partnerships, but that's how we want to work with chambers. At that level, youth chambers, but at local level, specifically chambers. And we found our experience is that it's working better.
So are they not manipulated at that level?
No, Chair, because at the local level, the chamber facilitates, for example, our interaction with them. So a chamber does not approve any loan. SIFA approves the loan, but the chamber just becomes our pipeline kind of platform. And when we need to do training to the small businesses, they organize the training and we go in. And we communicate directly also with the small businesses because they, once they've applied, they become directly our clients and we've got their direct communication. Again, I think that maybe a year from now, for now it seems to be working quite well, but a year from now certainly we'll be sharing much more experiences in terms of that approach. So maybe the only area that we could just respond to now is the thing of the supplier. I don't know whether the supplier credit is at all.
Yeah, I'll just respond to the question on performance. And I think my colleague can just respond on the supplier.
Yeah,
the quick one. Over the past 2 years, we have approved quite a number of facilities to SMEs. I mean, we did 114 million the year ending March 2013, and then last year 2014 we did 1.1 billion. We are expecting to go around billion, around the range of billion this year. As a result of that, when our book is growing, you need to be able to intensify the management of the portfolio. I mean, the loan book is sitting just around a billion rand now, and this says that it will be about 3.8 billion rand in the next 5 years. So we need to be able to ensure that we manage our book more efficiently. And our target in terms of the impairment, we are saying we need to be between 25% and 30% impairment, which that's where we are currently. We down over the next 5 years, we need to reduce it to 20%. So 10% will be our appetite with regard to the level of impairment. But then it matters with the type of plan that we deal with, it don't provide security. The level of risk is high, so you need to be able to strike the balance between the management of the risk, but at the same time, we also need to be able to collect the fund that we've laid out there to be able to help in terms of finding other business. So that's it in terms of the, from a performance perspective, in terms of our impairment, which is a major measurement or indicator for performance. Let's talk on the subject credit.
As you were at the Brazilian EMBS, they managed to supply it to the government. But it's really how that it aims to look analyze the program is more almost like promote their own type of users. That's really where the Brazilian supply to the government is. So what we've done is that we've looked at in the context of South Africa, how do we shorten the distribution chain of supply credit to the end of the year? So the objective of supply credit is really to take advantage of consuming the National Credit Act. The National Credit Act is a provision that says that where a supplier extends credit to a small business, for instance, it can be seen as individual credit. So it's almost like the same credit that if you go to a doctor and the doctor doesn't charge the credit for the first 3 days. That's actually incidental, so that's where the zero credit is done. So the supplier credit program is almost solved on that principle. We're able to get the suppliers of input goods. Now, if we define input goods to suppliers, for example, in the loading industry, would be typically a tailor that says that, and you've got it off, and it tells, so and tell person to X house for the day. If I do that job, I actually can get a 2,000 rand for the day. But I need the inputs to be able to go and tell. So what we have done now is that we've now partnered with, for example, with the loading and materials warehouse, like for example, Castle, we have struck
the relationship was. We were saying that throughout the cash flow store, for all of these emerging contractors, we as FIFA, we stand guarantor for the loan which the supplier would extend to the small business. And then for the first 30 days of that program, if the supplier doesn't pay, the SME doesn't pay within the first 30 days, the supplier can basically claim from FIFA, and then FIFA will basically then pursue the loan for the emerging contract. That's on that one level. So we're doing it at the moment in steel, because we find that in the manufacturing trade, we find lots of small businesses concentrated in your burglar bar industry, your place, etc., especially in the fairly urban areas where you find lots of steel, small businesses concentrated in steel, and that's a lot to do with the type of steel that exists in that segment of the small business market. Then we also try, in the fresh produce market, we're also having a discussion with the Tshwane fresh produce market, where we're encouraging the Tshwane fresh produce market to actually make use of the supply chain program for the informal sector. For example, the Tshwane market is a 2 billion rand annual market, and 35% of the buyers on the market is actually informal sector traders. So we are in an advanced discussion with Tshwane. They've committed to take the program to the council, and we've committed to do a 10 million rand pilot for the Tshwane market on supplier credit for the informal sector. But the principle is really about trying to guarantee the supply of input goods to small businesses who use the system basically for turnover.
May I add, Chai, before you respond? One of the things that we are continuously looking at is that there are suppliers of building materials that may be small businesses, that may be rural businesses, that may be survivors. In particular, if I have to make an example, in almost every village, and I'm going to talk about the Eastern Cape, that's what I know, in almost every village in the Eastern Cape, there's a manufacturer of bricks. And what we are saying is, in this program, we must look beyond just your formal and big suppliers. We must also look at integrating, the township manufacturers of bricks, integrating those suppliers also into the program. Because by integrating them in the program, it means they also sell bigger volumes and they are supported through the FIFA program.
That was my point, Chuan, to say, how do you then go to build up, which is established, which is an established company, and you bring more people to build it, whereas you have people down there. Maybe the question to be asked is, how do you select the criteria in which to select companies you partner with? Because to me, in the Brazil model, saying we grow your own so that you encourage your own production. But in this case, you are buying from already existing, which is big and international, and then you're neglecting the actual people that are trying, you imagine, producers who are supposed to be supporting so that they can grow and begin to compete also as time goes on in the bigger market. That's why I was asking, how do you then relate to the program of government? Because you can't just look at it at a peripheral level. You need to look at it deeper, go deeper into it, and see how best can assist, especially in the rural areas, those people to grow. Because yes, I might be a brick producer now, producing 100, but if I don't have the market for 100, how am I going to grow?
Yeah.
And how am I going to gain more experience into that? So that I'm able tomorrow, if I produce a brick that, or I manufacture a brick that is of low quality, as time goes on, I'll be able to understand through your help how do I make a better brick.
Mm.
So that I can, also specialize in this field where I am. This is what government is trying to do. And if we don't use government money really to support such initiatives, we have a problem, or small businesses, we have a problem. A lot of Pakistanis, tomorrow I won't be surprised, you come and tell us you partnered with somebody that you know is going to be
There's nothing wrong. But if everything wrong, if you, only Pakistan is that are not partnered with our people. Because they have to. They have to also lend the skill to our locals. So that we can develop our own people, and so they can be able also to have knowledge, skill, and also generate some income for their communities too. This is what I thought this program is all about. Because if I borrowed it from Brazil, it has to look like that.
Yeah.
You can't just rob it in because you want to do something. And that's what NGP is talking about. Because NGP is supporting the NCP. NDP cannot just look into economic issues without getting drivers. There has to be drivers of that. And IPEC is supporting also the NDP so that you are able to achieve the overall NDP objectives. So I think for us to do that, we really not need to look deeper into that, especially the board, because you are our political eyes in FIFA. Make sure that you look into that. FIFA don't make, because I know what the mentality of officials, what they do, they would partner with those that they think they will get something out of. And if it doesn't help the country, because we are where we are today because of such issues that we're talking to earlier on.
Chair,
I just wanted a question on that, because I'm worried about this one.
No, so, Chair, as I said, we know a lot of suppliers of grapes in particular, I just mentioned as an example, in rural areas that must benefit from the program. I think the pilot was just saying where are they already buying and battling, but the extension, secondly, we have in our direct lending clients who are the manufacturers of these building materials, and certainly we would like to make sure that those businesses become sustainable and therefore are able to pay our loan. So we also are looking at channeling the benefits to making sure that small businesses buy from those so that they grow.
Do you have a research unit within FIFA?
We have a research person.
No, but that shouldn't be a person.
Yeah.
If you're saying you have this footprint in all these areas, there has to be passion. Because these people have to tell you, in this locality, there are so many manufacturers of bricks, steel makers, you know, granite, what, and so forth. And at the end of the day, that must inform your way you finance. I don't know if members agree to that, but I'm thinking if we're talking development, there's no other way. There's no other way, because you are dealing with emerging small enterprises. Well, medium, you can find them somewhere else, but your responsibility mainly is around that. And how do you then grow that sector if you don't focus on it? And that's why I really think that you must look at now getting people who will go down there, get you information, feed you, and give you a report as a FIFA, even if it's CEO or the board, so that we can have a picture of how South Africa looks like. Because to be honest, Chairperson, I understand you are saying Eastern Cape. Yes, it might be looking as it is looking because of bigger population. But the fact of the matter is your footprint in the rural areas. I'm looking at Mpumalanga, I'm looking at the Northwest. I'm looking at the Free State. Remember the Free State when we discussed last time, including also the ICC. They have a very low percentage of even Tovangie existence in those areas. The Northern Cape is even worse. You know, it is even worse. So I think those are the issues that we need to look at in order to be able to say, yes, we are making strides. Please, let's look at that, and I'm worried that even the pilots that you are doing, you are continuing to do these pilots in the urban area and in bigger towns. I'm worried about that. When are you going to be saying, I was expecting that you say that the market in Mangaung, yes. Yes. Oh yes, that's not in in Mthatha, or you can say even in, where is this one? Kanyamazane. Yes, it could be, but it's something else. But those are the issues, the area that, the issues that we are talking about. I mean, you did a direct lending model, pilot also, you did it in Gauteng. I mean, now you are doing the another pilot, is still in Gauteng, Tshwane and all that. When are you going to this rural area? Because I think that in Makuba, that would give you a better picture than Gauteng.
Yeah.
Gauteng, I think they have macro issues to deal with. In a rural area, they're still dealing with micro issues. So focus the macro issues in those bigger Western Cape, Gauteng, and then leave the rest, the emerging issues, to the emerging provinces. Yes, we want equity at the end of the day. We can't get equity if we don't address those issues. Okay?
No touch, sir. No touch.
Okay. The other issues, we are expecting that you can come back with that. I think especially us, because some of them would need better packaging, mm-hmm. so that members can be informed. We might even decide, no, let's get the workshop where FIFA comes in and talk to us about the at length about some of the things, because the meeting of 2.5 hours might not give us the whole picture. So we need, because our aim is not just to hear what you are saying. Is to compare what you are saying with what has been done on the ground. We want to get the outcome. The output might look good, but to us, the outcome, we need tangible things. We need to see that. And I don't know if members have any follow-up questions or any recommendation that they want to make to the CIFA delegation. Otherwise, let me use this opportunity to hear the chair and the CEO leadership to thank you very much for responding to our call. It might have taken too long, but I think it shows that the work that was put in, you know, really needed to or justify the long meeting that we had to take. I'm sorry, my voice, I don't know what's going on. But we really appreciate the work that you are doing and the fact that you are growing. I know you used to fight a lot even in the way you were giving us information, but now I can see that really the impact of IPC itself. Yeah, they're really, really happy. They're really doing a good job. We really appreciate that. And you are also on the receiving end, but you're also learning. You are willing to pick up, you know, jobs, and that's quite pleasing. Otherwise, we'll talk about other issues next time. Thank you very much, and all the best for the future. We'll meet when we deal with the corporate land.
Thank you very much. We truly appreciate the guidance, in particular the suggestion. Thank you very much for the time.
Okay. Thank you, Mira. I think we can have an end day today. You have other I don't know about the lunch. Okay, so let's plan after 12. Sort of a 12. Or look up to the living.
Oh.